It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
You're tuned to another edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC, airing in the New York, New Jersey metro area and worldwide at mybradio.com and on the 77 WABC app. Well, yes, as I've been saying for months, we thank you, the listener, for your patronage of this program. Nielsen Ratings has us consistently in the top 10 in New York AM radio at this hour. We slipped one. We went from 4 to 5. Okay, but we'll still take it. We're in the top 10. It's pretty good. So thank you. As you've all known to come and trust that every single week we have a fantastic guest, either a C-level executive or an author or someone that has a tremendous amount of business information to share with the listeners. And tonight's going to be no difference. Tonight we're going to be talking all about the world of sales. Before we open up, I want to give some thank yous. Special thank you to the great team here at Bottom Line Marketing Group, who plays a very important support role for the show. Srilly, Eliana, Hoodie, Miriam, Dina, thank you. And to the great folks at 77 WABC, James, Matt, Chris, Lexi, Justin, thank you. Also, a special shout-out to the various channels that Mind Your Business is syndicated on. The B-Tank magazine, we had it featured the interview that I had with Rachel Krauss, the VP of Marketing at Westfield World Trade Center. We're on C-Suite Radio, C-Suite TV, Audio Boom, Player.fm, iTunes. And certain episodes are also videoed as well, and we have a robust YouTube channel. But the easiest way to access every single past interview that we've had is by going to mybradio.com, mybradio.com. That's the platform that has every single guest that we've had. They're all there, and it's in the format that you prefer. Some people like to just listen to on iTunes. Some people like to download the actual episode. Some people want to see if it turned into a YouTube episode. It's all there, mybradio.com. We also apologize. Sometimes it goes a little slow because of the amount of traffic on the site. So bear with it. But yeah, it's all there. All there. I mean, you could pick up the interview I had with Dick Schulz, founder and chairman emeritus of Best Buy, world-renowned customer service expert Shep Hyken, the president and CEO of Dale Carnegie, Joe Hart. I mean, and so many other amazing guests, Captain Sully Sullenberger. I mean, the list goes on. They're all available by going to the dedicated site that we have, mybradio.com. mybradio.com. Also wanted to mention that after the interview, the first portion of the show, which is the interview with my guest Lee Souls, we'll get to him in a minute, we're going to have this special segment behind the scenes with Rena Teitelbaum and Eliana Schwartz talking about branding. Well, on the line with me is none other than Lee Souls. Well, let me just tell you a little bit about him. He's the CEO at Sales Architects, and he just came out with a new release, which is why we had to get him. Hey, listen, let's face it, folks. Sales is at the core of every single business. I challenge you to tell me about a business that doesn't thrive on a salesperson or a sales team. And therefore, when we saw this book, Sales Differentiation, 19 powerful strategies to win more deals at the prices you want, we said, hey, we got to get Lee on the show. Lee, thank you for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So, I mean, where do we jump in? I mean, you talk about 19 powerful strategies. You have this book, Sales Differentiation. Mm-hmm. What is it all about?
Well, before we get started, if I could ask you a question.
Hey, okay. I mean, it's my show, but okay.
We're going to turn this interview around. See, we're going to be different.
Okay, I'm set. Go.
All right. How many expert guests would you guess that you've had over the years? How many guests on the show?
We had roughly, well, because some had multiple guests, we probably had close to 200 guests.
200 guests.
Yes.
So your listeners are probably wondering why you're having Lee Souls on the show.
Oh, come on, Lee. I can answer that. But okay,
well,
I'll let you
I'll
answer.
I'll tell him. You don't have to. I'll tell him. I'm the best sales consultant in the world.
Hey, by the way, we had Ron Carr on and Adam Lieberman. They may go after me here, you know?
No, I'm the best sales consultant in the world. So if you're listening to this show, what do you think of me now? And I'm guessing your listeners are probably saying, what an arrogant jerk. And if you're thinking that about me, Here's my question for you. Why do you think your prospects feel any differently about you than you feel about me at this moment when you come marching in preaching that what you're selling is the best? They don't. They feel the same way about you as you feel about me at this moment. But, you know, let's think about this. Why do salespeople even use the word best? There's actually two reasons.
Right.
One is to build relationships. Well, I just turned you off, so I failed with that initiative. And the second is to differentiate themselves from the competition. But if you think about it, how many salespeople do you think walk into a prospect and say, you know, product is so-so, service pretty good, and our technology is eh. How many would you like to buy? Every salesperson on the planet comes in preaching that what they have to offer is the best, which means the second reason, the whole idea of differentiating ourselves as to why we use the word best, we fail there too. So we got to get out of the business of even using the word best and position different and do it in such a way that prospects say our solution's the best without us ever saying the word. That's how you know you're really being effective in sales.
Folks, I think now you know why I wanted Lee on the radio.
Well, I have a face for radio.
Don't put yourself down. But, you know, you explained it so well. Because, you know, from the vantage point of a salesperson, he thinks he's... I'm going to get in trouble here, but okay. He's God's gift to the world, right? You know, like, mm-hmm. You know, why aren't they taking my... You know, I once had a salesperson call me. Lee, this will make you cringe. A salesperson called me and said... And he was trying to get a hold of me, and, you know, he was trying and trying, doing his job, and it took him seven times, and on the seventh time, he got through. So he starts off, you know, it's very hard to get a hold of you. I'm like, excuse me? I mean, like, you know, it's terrible. Like, come on. You know, now I wasn't making life difficult for him, but just, you know, was unavailable, and he's, you know, running after me. You know, come on, a little bit of, you know, just play the game right. Hello? You know, that's right. Why the way you started was really so great, you know, because it's so true.
Well,
you framed
and I've researched this best issue. I actually went to college in upstate New York and at Binghamton, so it's okay. Run in New York and New Jersey.
Okay.
I know I have a lot of Pi Lambda Phi fraternity brothers listening in today. And, you know, so I had this opportunity as a history major, but also studied business to identify a fact that most people aren't aware of. And that is there's one person on the planet who can say best and have it be meaningful. You know who that is?
I'm listening.
You want to guess?
I'm listening. Because, well, I mean...
It's your client.
Yeah, because you would think the person himself, but it's the client.
Right. So, for example, if you say, I have the best radio show,
right,
someone that you're saying it to might give you an eye roll and go, oh, here we go. Of course he's going to say it's the best. You have no credibility.
Right.
Guest on your show.
Right, you were talking about the point of credibility. Absolutely, right. I mean, that's a no-brainer. From a credibility standpoint, right, which is why, and I'm sure you talk of, you know, we can get into it, is why real testimonials, I'm not talking about the fake ones, real testimonials are so valuable.
Absolutely. Testimonials, references, tremendously important in selling.
Yeah. So let me get into this particular question, and that is, you call the book Sales Differentiation. Now, differentiation, I mean, as the head of a marketing firm, I know is a big word in marketing. How is it a big word in sales?
Yeah, it's very common. When I first talk with executives about this whole idea of sales differentiation, even though I say the word sales, their minds still go towards marketing. Hmm. That's where the common executive and business owner thinks that differentiation is solely a marketing issue. And I correct them. It's not that marketing isn't an opportunity for differentiation, but they're missing out on an opportunity in what I refer to as sales differentiation. And let me define the two for you.
Right.
Marketing differentiation is one-directional communication for the masses. It screams, hey, look at us. We're here. That's what trade shows do. That's what websites do. It yells to the marketplace, we have all of these capabilities. Take a look at us. So it paves the way for salespeople. But sales differentiation is two-directional communication with an individual buyer. Everybody buys for a different reason. So we need to personalize that experience. Mm-hmm. So we build off marketing differentiation and make the entire interaction about the person sitting in front of us that leads them to want to buy from us.
Yeah, so it's always fun to interview someone that has knowledge and is able to explain it and make it sound so easy.
I'll give you an example.
Yeah, sure.
So in the 1990s, luxury car companies like Lexus and Mercedes discovered they had a big problem. For years, they had sold cars, but they had shifted their business model to leasing them.
Right.
And you know, when you sell a car, it leaves the lot, it's gone.
Right.
But when you lease it, it's like a boomerang. After 2 years, 3 years, it comes back to you.
Right.
And if you look at the financial model in leasing, you sell it for one price within the lease, and then when the car comes back, you have to sell it again to be profitable on that particular vehicle. Well, these car companies didn't account for the fact that there was a word to describe these cars, which was used cars.
That's right.
And if you think of the visual that people get when you say used cars, you think of jalopy.
Right.
This is the car you buy for your teenager when they first get their driver's license. Right? And these executives said, well, wait a minute, that's not what these cars are. This is a Lexus. This is a Mercedes. And it only has a few miles on it. It's 2 years old, 3 years old. That's not what this car is. So as you might imagine, they had to change the perception that we had of those cars, and they came out with this expression, certified used cars,
right,
as if we didn't believe someone else owned the car prior to us. Had to put certified in there. And it worked tremendously well. There's countless studies, if you look it up in Google, and how well that perception changed by positioning certified pre-owned. Find a car dealership that doesn't have both new cars and certified pre-owned today.
That's right. I challenge you.
They all do it.
Yeah.
So if you come back to marketing and sales differentiation,
mm-hmm.
it's marketing differentiation that created the intrigue among these potential buyers. See, they wanted to reach someone that had the financial wherewithal to buy a new car. Maybe not a new Lexus or a new Mercedes, but a new vehicle. And so marketing differentiation reached those people to get them to consider one of those cars. But it was sales differentiation that led to one specific vehicle being in your driveway this afternoon, that personalized interaction between salesperson and buyer that led to one car being bought.
My guest this evening is none other than Lee Solds. He wrote the book, Sales Differentiation, 19 Powerful Strategies to Win More Deals at the Prices You Want. Yes, this is a book that you want. Yes. Well, one lucky listener is going to win it. All you have to do is text over MYB to 64600. Again, text over MYB to 64600. And one lucky listener is going to win a hardcover copy of it. However, you could be a winner just by going to get it. Everyone else, it's available. Barnes & Noble, Amazon, it's a Kindle release. It's out there. Again, Sales Differentiation by Lee Solds. My guest this evening is Lee Solds, the author of the new release, Sales Differentiation, 19 Powerful Strategies to Win More Deals at the Prices You Want. In fact, one lucky listener is going to win an autographed copy. Sorry, I didn't mention that earlier. Thank you, Lee. An autographed hardcover copy of Sales Differentiation. All you have to do is text over MYB to 64600. Again, text over MYB to 64600. And one lucky listener is going to win Sales Differentiation. It is a HarperCollins leadership release. This is a very serious book, but yet it's an easy read. I don't want to get scared like, oh no, this is going to be something. Go back to Harvard to try to figure it out. It's an easy read, but he gets right down to brass tacks. And that's why we wanted to have Lee on the show. And Lee, thank you for taking of your precious time to join me here on Mind Your Business.
Oh, this is great fun.
Thank you. Well, one of the chapters you have, and I'm going to read it exactly verbatim. What would you pay for something you could get for free? Well, you're already laughing. What is that all about? I mean, you tell me. I mean, okay.
Yeah, so that's one of the questions I love to ask audiences when I give my keynote speeches or conduct workshops.
Okay.
I'll look at them and I'll say, what would you pay for something you could get for free? And overwhelmingly, they say nothing. It's
right,
free.
Right.
And I look at them and I say, well, you're lying. And they get really annoyed. I said, because you all do it. And they look really puzzled.
Right.
And I'll pull out a bottle of water. a bottle of water, and I'll slap it down in front of them and say, who hasn't bought bottled water in the last 2 weeks?
That's right.
And, of course, the whole audience has.
Right.
You know, last year in this country, we spent $11.9 billion, that's with a B, on bottled water. Yet at any time, we could go into our kitchen and drink to our heart's content for free.
That's right.
Right? Anytime
that's
we could.
That's right. That's right.
And so I used to look at this and I'd say, you know, anytime you can go in, drink to your heart's content, and here we are paying for something we could have for free. And then I'll ask the audience, I'll say, so where does your bottled water even come from? And no one can tell me. So I'll say, you know, for all you know,
that's
while
right.
you're sitting with me here today, someone has broken into your home, stuck a hose on your faucet, is filling up bottles and selling them back to you. And I used to think that that was funny. And then I found this news article about Aquafina and Dasani both. They were forced to disclose that their water comes from the same source as your tap. Did you know that? Same source. We are truly paying for something we could have for free. And think about how we do it, right? We go to Walmart, we go to Target, we buy it right. by the case, and it runs about 20 cents a bottle when we do it. Right. So I started with, what would you pay for something you could get for free? Now I'm telling you, you pay 20 cents a bottle. Would you pay 10 times that? What do you think?
I mean, you would think no. You would certainly think no.
Well, every one of us has done it. Every time you go to the gas station, also known as the convenience store, at a minimum you're paying 10 times the price for the same exact bottle of water, water we could have had for free. Then we have another way that we've come up with to spend money on something we could have for free, refillable bottles. And, oh, my daughter loves these because you can get them in whatever color, shape, size, whatever your mood is, you can find a refillable bottle. And those run, the good ones, about 20 bucks. So if you think of it from an ROI perspective, return on investment, you could have 100 pre-filled bottles of water for the price of one refillable bottle, all for water we could have had for
free.
Right? And so I remind salespeople of this little anecdote.
That's great.
Whenever they think that price is truly the issue.
This is such a great metaphor. Oh, this is great. This is you're right. I mean, I would imagine without the metaphor, people will just argue and argue all day long. But once you spell it out this way, like, I really cannot argue on the points you're making.
I'll give you another one. Here's okay. a little homework assignment.
Okay.
Next time you go to the supermarket, look at the price difference between the store brand milk and the branded milk product.
Right. It's got to be. Yeah,
68% or more expensive. And so I researched this. I'm like, okay, I'm a sales differentiation guy. There's got to be a reason. And the first was, are they saying that this milk tastes better? Nope, they didn't claim it tastes better. Was it going to make me smarter? Did they have smarter cows? No, they didn't make that claim either. But if you look at the branded one, sometimes they boast 9 grams of protein per serving. So I said, oh, maybe that's the difference. Maybe there's more protein per serving.
Right.
Then if you look at the generic one, the store brand, it's the same. There's no difference. So we're unnecessarily spending money on a product that we could have had much less. And again, it's back to when you think price is really the issue, we're spending money when we don't have to, and factors more money, again, when we don't necessarily need to.
Yeah. Well, we're going to move along because we have so much to cover, and this is really fantastic stuff. Let's talk about salespeople themselves. What would you say is the biggest mistake that salespeople make when trying to differentiate themselves?
Yeah, I'd say one of the biggest ones is blaming their buyer when the price issue comes along. It's their fault that they don't see the value corresponding to the price that you put on that product. I mentioned before, I'm originally from the New York, New Jersey area.
Right.
I was born in Brooklyn, lived in Staten Island, then Marlboro, New Jersey.
That's great.
And so now I live in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And when you move to Minneapolis, they don't give you Minnesota skin. I still got my New York City, New Jersey skin. So while my neighbors are out when it snows, and by the way, it snowed here yesterday, just to give you a frame of reference.
Wow. Yeah.
They're out there having a great time with their snow blowers and shoveling. They're looking for more driveways to clear.
Right.
No. I grew up East Coast, and you know how we deal with snow on the East Coast? We get a guy. So I use this online service to get a guy.
Okay.
And the way it works is you put in your project, in this case it was snow removal, and they connect you with various suppliers. And I connected with this one guy, if you will,
okay,
who happened to live in the same city where I did, and we had a nice email exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got his price. It was factors more than all the competitors. And I sent him an email back, one line. All it said was, I wish your price was lower. He sent me this long email that basically blamed me for not seeing the value. He got annoyed. And at no point did he ever differentiate himself. It was my fault, according to him. And so when you look at the price issue, and anytime a prospect is saying to you, your price is out of line, we've got to embrace this and say, we failed. We haven't demonstrated meaningful value such that this person is willing to pay this price for this product.
Yeah, so true. Yeah, I always wonder if it's arrogance or attitude, lack of training, you know, even common sense. You're talking about it from the sales side. It's true, but even I just always get annoyed at the lack of common sense that some people have.
Yeah, I mean, certainly every time I think I find the line where common sense ends, somebody does something and I go, okay, now I got to start all over again. It's gone.
I'm going to move along. In the book, you raise a very interesting point that people don't know how to buy what salespeople are selling. Can you explain that?
Yeah, this is a really critical one. This is important.
Mm-hmm.
I always ask my audiences, who knows more about the world of potential solutions in your industry, you or the people you sell to? And I've never had a single salesperson in all the years I'm doing this say, oh, the people I sell to know much more than I do about what I'm selling. Every one of them says, I have a broader expertise than the people that I sell to. Yet, they quickly forget that when they look at a business card and they see CEO, president, VP, and they say, oh, they know what they want. And they just defer to that person's perception of a situation and miss out on this opportunity to shape buyer decision criteria. They don't know it could be better or different than what they presently have.
Right. You know, it brings to mind that and one of the Chet Holmes presentations that people can access on YouTube, where he talks about is he says, okay, I'm going to ask everyone in the audience here, what is the best way to market your product or to sell? Is it through problems or solutions? So he said, most people will say solutions. And he says, wrong. Talk about the problems. Meaning this, you know, is very similar to the point that we're talking about here, and that is you're going to the heart of, at the end of the day, the prospect, let's crawl into their mind to make sure that we really are solving a problem. We are solving a problem. No, is that pretty much what goes to the heart of what you're discussing?
No, it's more than that.
Okay.
See, when salespeople go on a sales call, they're used to asking questions that are pain questions or challenge questions to expose areas that someone perceives could be better or different. But what if what you're selling addresses something that they didn't know could be better or different?
Hmm.
I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
I mentioned I'm in Minneapolis, and Minneapolis is different than New York and New Jersey. When I moved here, this was shocking. Every homeowner and every business has the contract for their own trash removal.
Hmm.
So on Wednesday mornings, there's a parade of garbage trucks coming down my street representing every hauler you could name. right? A little different than where you are.
Right, of course. I hear just the city, yeah.
Yeah, and so the CEO of one of these companies reaches out to me and he says, Lee, I believe we have meaningful differences and we shouldn't be fighting on price. We haven't really gotten our arms around it, and we certainly aren't effective at communicating it in a meaningful way. So they went through a program with me, mm-hmm. and one of the differentiators we identified is what's called a can-be-clean truck. They're the only ones in the state of Minnesota that offer this. This truck, twice a year, follows the garbage truck and cleans your garbage cans. How cool is that?
Very cool.
And it's free. They don't charge their clients additionally for it. So for their residential salespeople who are selling by either knocking on doors or making calls, right. we developed what I refer to as a positioning question. It's an open-ended question, a non-yes-no question, designed to help someone think differently about the solutions they have or could have. So right after they introduce themselves, the question they ask is, when's the last time you had your garbage cans cleaned? Because we know they never have unless they did it themselves.
That's right.
And if you've ever cleaned your garbage cans, you know what a miserable experience that is. Right?
Absolutely.
But if we relied on just pain questions, right. the questions around their perception, and we asked something like, what are three things you'd like to have but you don't have today? No one would say, boy, I'd love it if someone cleaned my garbage cans because right. you don't know it exists.
It's a great point. Right. It's not on their minds. It's not on
right.
their minds.
So we need to develop questions. Again, if you're in agreement with me that we have a greater expertise than the people we sell to in our world of potential solutions, we can't just rely on their perception. We have to help them see that there are better opportunities for them to improve whatever it is they have. And that's our responsibility.
Fair point. Fair point. My guest this evening is the author of Sales Differentiation, Lee Sauls. Actually, one lucky listener is going to win an autographed hardcover copy of this HarperCollins leadership release. All you have to do is text over MYB to 64600. Again, MYB for Mind Your Business to 64600. Otherwise, this is available nationwide, Barnes & Noble, of course, on Amazon. It's a Kindle release. Again, the subtitle is 19 Powerful Strategies to Win More Deals at the Prices You Want, again, by Lee Sauls. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile friendly? Well, look no further than WebsiteWithBrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500. Or visit WebsiteWithBrains.com.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC around the world at MYBRadio.com. And, of course, a shout-out to everyone tuning in on the app. At 77 WABC, their app. My guest this evening is Lee Sauls. He just came out with a new book, Sales Differentiation, 19 Powerful Strategies to Win More Deals at the Prices You Want. Well, he's been gracious, and one lucky listener is going to win an autographed hardcover copy. All you have to do is text over MYB to 64600. Text over MYB, for Mind Your Business, to 64600. And one lucky listener is going to win the brand new book by Lee Sauls, Sales Differentiation. Of course, a hardcover autographed copy. So good luck. And, of course, it is available nationwide at Barnes & Noble. Of course, it's on Amazon. It's a Kindle release, so it's in any format that you like. Well, Lee, I want to open up. I mean, let's talk about the world of sales. My understanding, I mean, the world's understanding of sales is that there are two parts, right? There's what you sell and how you sell it. And I think it's fair to ask you that question. I mean, you wrote the book on sales differentiation. Perhaps you could, explain it all.
Sure. So I wish what you said was true, where people would look at differentiation strategy both in what you sell and how you sell.
Right.
So when we talk about sales differentiation around what you sell, it's looking at the differentiators around your product, your service, your technology, the company itself, and putting together a communication strategy so that someone on the other side of the desk is just as passionate as you are about it. And so often I find companies where you have executive teams and salespeople, and they say, we are so passionate that what we have to offer, boy, we should conquer the marketplace. And they're ineffective at communicating that differentiation, and therefore everything becomes a price battle. Right. The other side of the equation is sales differentiation around how you sell. And I don't find executive teams or even salespeople looking at that and saying, boy, there's opportunities for us to be different, to provide meaningful value in such a way that someone would prefer to buy from us at the prices we want rather than the competition. Because every interaction between seller and buyer provides opportunities to be different, different in a meaningful way, but we don't necessarily put that strategy together. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
We decided, like so many other homeowners, as an efficiency strategy to replace our recessed lighting with LEDs.
Okay.
Went through that process, and you know, they're supposed to last, what, 10, 15, 20 years?
Right.
And the one that we put in my daughter's bathroom in the shower kept burning out. So the electrician comes back, and he checks it out, and he takes the bulb out, and he puts his hand up there. He says, Lee, it's all wet up here. And he looks up in my attic. He says, you don't have any insulation over your hi-hats. And let me preface this by saying, my wife will love to tell you I'm not handy. So, you know, all of the hi-hat, oh, you mean the lights in the ceiling? Got it. He says, you need to get some insulation up here. And here's what I know about insulation. It's pink, and it's R something or other. That's the extent of that. So I go into Google, and I find three companies that provide insulation services. The first one schedules the appointment, comes out, gives me a price.
Okay.
The second one schedules the appointment, comes out, gives me a price. The third one schedules the appointment, sends me an email saying, Lee, I'm guessing you've never purchased insulation before. Here are six questions to help you make an informed decision.
That's great.
Oh, my goodness, thank you. Because the other two guys, they came out, I didn't even know what to ask them. Is it pink? Because, you know, it's got to be pink. Yeah, and it was pink, and it was R something or other, so I was happy. Then he comes out, and after he looks, this says, so are you planning to take advantage of the utility rebate with insulation? So what rebate? He said, didn't you say you met with two of my competitors already? I said, yeah. And they didn't tell you that there's a $500 rebate? No.
I mean, this guy is great. Yeah, he got the sale. He could charge you whatever he wants, basically.
He got the sale. He was the highest price of the three, but he demonstrated expertise, helped me make an informed buying decision, and he got the deal.
That was great. And if I had to pick the top two words from this last question, it was demonstrated expertise.
Absolutely. And here's the kicker. Yeah. Was his insulation better? I don't think so. It was pink. And it was R something or other.
Right.
And his price wasn't better. He was the highest of the three.
Yeah.
But I was confident that he could get the job done properly. And he did a marvelous job.
Now, I just have to ask you this question because it's so critical to the sales process. Is that so much more critical when it's a service business rather than, a product-based business?
No, there's no difference. Back to what we said before, people don't know how to buy what you sell.
Right. All right,
another question I like to ask audiences, I'll say, raise your hand if you can tell me the difference between a regular apple and an organic apple. And it's less than 10% of the audience that raises their hand. So here's a product that we buy every week, and we don't know how to make an informed buying decision for that simple product, an apple. You think they know how to buy your stuff?
Yeah. Great point.
So absolutely critical.
Great point. I know we don't have a tremendous amount of time left, roughly, for this part of this segment of the show, around 7-8 minutes. And your book has 19 powerful strategies. So, Lee, you're the guru at this, so I'm going to leave it in your lap. I don't know if you want to talk about all 19 or you want to, pick on one. I'll leave the floor to you, but how do you want to handle this?
All right. Well, everything we've talked about thus far, it's all in the book, Sales Differentiation, and we've been talking through several of these concepts, but one we haven't touched upon is word selection. And I'll give you an example. Imagine we have two boys named Stephen and David, and they started playing Little League Baseball when they're 8 years old. Now they're 12 years old, and they're eligible for the Little League All-Star team, you know, the one, the road to Williamsport.
That's right.
So now, since they started at 8 and they're 12, they have 5 years of experience. Here's the big question. You ready? This is for you. Which one's the All-Star? Seems like some information's missing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So what you're saying is years of experience doesn't mean you're any good at what you do. Well, don't we do that in sales? We boast a number of years of experience, and we expect it to matter to someone on the other side of the desk that it's differentiating us positively. The reality, it's not. We need to be talking about the expertise that we've developed, the mastery that we've developed through experience. That's a conversation that buyers want to have.
So if I, you know, it's a great point you're raising, but I just want to, you know, push back. If a company is around 100 years, they're marking their centennial, you know, anniversary. Do you mean to tell me there's no value to that?
It's not that there's no value, but when you just talk about years, that just means you've done time. Doesn't mean you're any good at what you do. You could be dirt cheap. There are a lot of companies out there, their sole strategy is we're the cheapest. They don't talk about the quality that they have, but they're the cheapest, and people are willing to roll the dice based on being the cheapest, because the salesperson with a better skill set that's selling the higher price hasn't taken that business away.
So, okay, so if a company is, again, coming back to that example where they're celebrating their centennial anniversary, is how would you recommend that they package it to leverage the fact that they were around 100 years?
So what they should be talking about is the expertise that they've developed. My guess, if they've been doing this for 100 years, they've seen every problem, every situation. They know how to help their clients tackle it because of the expertise that they've developed over the years. They haven't done it one time. They've done it countless times because they've been around for 100 years.
That's a great perspective. Well, let's move along to the next question. Inside the book, you share an intriguing way to view prospecting. Oh, wow. We got to cover that. Yeah. Cause, I mean, prospecting is like, how am I getting my future leads? How are they? You know? Well, what's your advice on that?
Yeah. And prospecting, it's so critical. Another question I like to ask audiences, who's your biggest competitor? And for most salespeople, that company just rolls off their tongue. It's company A, it's company B, it's company C. And I'll say, well, yeah, I'm sure they're a pretty good competitor, but there's one that's even bigger. And they'll say, oh, you mean status quo. There's a lot of books and articles that talk about status quo being a tough competitor, the choice to do nothing. But there's a competitor I've never found an executive or a salesperson perceive that is so critical, formidable, bigger than any of the other ones. And do you know who that is?
I'm intrigued.
Every salesperson that is calling the same person you are trying to get a meeting. See, we're egocentric. We think competition is about us. But let's flip it around. There is no one in the history of business who's had the job that every hour on the hour you meet with a salesperson. It's never happened. We're calling on executives, oftentimes are doing two, if not three jobs, and the likelihood of them taking a meeting is slim.
Right.
And they're getting calls from salespeople throughout their sphere of influence, through all the responsibilities that they have in the organization. And they're only going to take a select few meetings. So we need to be different right in that first interaction, because if we can't get a meeting, there's no proposal. Right. If there's no proposal, there's no deal. So it all starts right here. So it's the competition for FaceTime, and I don't mean the Apple technology.
Right.
It's being able to get in front of someone, and you have to intrigue them right up front. And
great
here's
point.
A strategy that I've found that's very, very effective.
All ears.
Imagine it's 2 in the morning. There's a pounding on your front door. It's the police. Everybody getting nervous now? It's the police. They want to talk with you about a crime that's recently been committed. Now, they don't randomly pick you and your home for this conversation. They follow a trail of evidence, put together a crime theory, And that's led them to you for a conversation right now. Can you see where we're going? Sales crime theory. And a sales crime theory is founded in the answer to this question. Why should they want to talk with you right now? Not why should we talk with them. It's why should they want to talk with us right now? So we have to search for evidence. And there's evidence around their company. Maybe they have a new initiative. Or maybe it's their role and there's a new trend that they're not aware of. Maybe it's their competitors. One of the most effective ones is that one of their competitors is doing something that they're not, and you're going to be there to help them take advantage of that opportunity. Maybe there's a new best practice in their industry, and you can help them take advantage of that. Then on the other side, there's your company. Maybe you have a creative way to address an issue or your competition. So maybe you know a competitor is having an issue with quality or delivery, what have you. And then maybe there's a new best practice in your industry or a consolidation opportunity. So we conduct this research all in search of the answer to why they should want to talk with us right now. I'll give you two scenarios.
Sure.
One salesperson calls a vice president of manufacturing and says, yes, I understand you're the vice president of manufacturing, and I'm guessing you're responsible for quality and cost reduction. Mm-hmm. Second salesperson calls up and says, I was reading an interview with your CEO in the Business Journal, and he was talking about this initiative to reduce costs and improve quality, and since you're the head of manufacturing, I'm guessing those responsibilities are going to be passed to you. Which one of those two salespeople are more likely to get that meeting? Right? We don't even have to answer. You know it's the second one.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
And they could be selling the exact same item.
Right. I mean, this goes back. Yeah. I mean, this goes back to your example about the roofing. That really. We have. I wish we had more time because you're such great stuff. And I go on to remind the listeners. Lee's book is available at Barnes & Noble and, you know, bookstores nationwide and, of course, on Amazon, etc. Sales Differentiation, 19 Powerful Strategies to Win More Deals at the Prices You Want. One lucky listener is going to win an autographed hardcover copy. All you have to do is text over MYB to 64600, MYB to 64600. Well, I'm going to squeeze in two last questions. My last question is going to be just for a final takeaway. But before I get to that question, inside the book, you talk about a buyer's request for references as an opportunity. I know we touched on this earlier, but still, why is that so important, references as a sales opportunity?
It's probably the most misunderstood phase of the entire sales process. When a buyer says, can I get three references? A salesperson hears, we're getting the deal. Right, they'll tell their manager, hey, they just asked for references. I got to get them 3 by 5 o'clock and we're getting the business. Doesn't even dawn on them that they've sent that request to two other suppliers. But if you come to the other side and why buyers ask for references, it's a critical validation step because, see, we've come in preaching that we're the best. Right. And decision making carries with it risk. Right. If you're the one that changes suppliers, if you're the one that outsources for the first time and that decision goes sideways.
Oh, man, you're toast. Yeah,
you're toast, right? Yeah. So someone's career could be in jeopardy.
Right.
So you got a salesperson who sees it as a task. Get it by 5, we get the deal. And a prospect who's saying, I can't be wrong here. This is a critical validation step. So what happens is when the request comes in, we just take an order. Get them 3 references.
Right.
But I'm going to share with you a strategy to be different, something that would be meaningful, that they would treasure. The first thing is, when we talk about references, most salespeople only have 3 in their back pocket because, you see, buyers always ask for 3. We've got 3, and we use the same 3 every time.
Right.
So what we need to do is put together a reference portfolio. Clients that could speak to every aspect of our business that someone would want to validate in a reference discussion. So, for example, Can we handle an account of that size in this geography with this level of complexity? All of those things, we need references that could speak to it. And when someone asks for references, we don't just salute and say, no problem, I'll have it to you by 5. We ask two questions back. What is it you're hoping to learn from these discussions, and who's going to be making the call? And we ask those questions because that helps us select the right references from our portfolio. Yeah. We also reflect on the conversations that we've had. What was concerning to them? And use that also as a factor to select the right references. Then we put this game in motion. See, the reference process is completely undefined, right? There's nothing that's ever been written that says this is how you conduct a reference check on a supplier.
Right.
So we need to lay some structure to it, helping our buyer achieve their objective, which is to validate that we're the right supplier. So the first thing we're going to do is something different than our competition. Our competitor is going to provide a company name, a contact person, their title, phone number, and email address. We're going to give all of that, but we're going to add another piece. We're going to include a paragraph that explains what it is this person can be a reference to. So, Brian Greenberg is a vice president of manufacturing for ABC Company. Mm-hmm. He had the same concerns and challenges you did about 5 years ago. And the solution that we're talking about putting in place for you is the same solution that we built for him. So be sure to ask him about A, B, and C, because that will help paint the picture for the solution we're going to build for you. So now we've helped that person that's going to be making these calls know what conversation to even have. On the other side of the equation, we have our clients who graciously has agreed to serve as a reference for us. And this is a critical sales function, again, undefined, so we have to coach that person to perform in that role. So we need to first let them know that someone's going to be contacting them and say, Andy Sachs is going to be contacting you. Like you, he's a vice president of manufacturing. And guess what? He has the same concerns you had 5 years ago. And the solution that we're talking about building for him is the same one we put in place for you. Be sure to talk with him about A, B, and C, because that's the same solution we're going to put into place.
Such great advice. Such great advice.
Right? So what have we done? We've demonstrated care. We've demonstrated expertise.
Right.
And we've helped our prospect have the conversation they want to have,
right, the focused
to
conversation,
get the validation
right,
they need.
Right, the focused conversation. Otherwise, it's just all over the place. How are you today? You're not going to, you know, the person may get distracted, not even get to the core. Lee, we are out of time. This is a great interview, but just maybe a final, what's a final quick 20-second takeaway, if you could share?
Sure. Probably the biggest one, and we've touched upon it a few different ways here, mm-hmm. is people don't know how to buy what you're selling. We have an obligation in sales to help people make an informed buying decision, but that also gives us an opportunity to shape buyer decision criteria. Wonderful opportunity for us to use while we help our clients achieve their objectives.
Folks, that was Lee Soles of the brand new release, Sales Differentiation. Thank you so much for joining me here, Lee. Yes, in case you missed it, we just wrapped up a great interview with Lee Soles. He wrote the book, Sales Differentiation, 19 Powerful Strategies to Win More Deals at the Prices You Want. Well, one lucky listener is going to win an autographed hardcover copy. All you have to do is text over MYB to 64600, MYB to 64600. Now I'm going to hand it over to my colleagues here, Rena Teitelbaum and Eliana Schwartz, to present the behind-the-scenes segment here presented by Bottom Line Marketing Group. Here goes.
Hey, it's Behind the Scenes with BLMG. Rena and Eliana here.
Hi, everybody.
On this week's segment, we're going to talk a little bit about something we get asked about a lot, which is what is the difference between branding and marketing? So I guess we'll just give a broad overview, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about branding this week. So, Eliana, you want to go ahead?
Yeah. So first, it's important to note that your brand is your promise to your customer. So it basically makes you stand out. And it stems from who you are, what you want to be, and what you want people to perceive you as and view you as. And like it's basically your voice. You have to be consistent. It has to be who you are, your overall goal, and what you stand behind and what represents your company and your services.
Right. I like what you just said about the who you are. To me, branding is who you are, and then the marketing is the what of your strategy. So branding is shaping sort of who you are as a brand and your voice and your personality, and that sort of serves as a platform for your marketing, which is the what. Your marketing can be ads, it can be, you know, emails, it can be whatever the medium it is that you select. But first you have to get that branding in place, which is shaping who are we, what do we stand for, what do we promise our customers, what do they want us to think of when they think of us, all those sort of things. I think that a common challenge maybe that companies face when they talk about branding versus marketing is, let's say a company decides they really want to do marketing, right? They have a great product, they want to get it out there. And they're like, okay, great, we're gonna either, you know, hire somebody to do our marketing, or we're gonna do it ourselves, whatever it is we're gonna do. And once they make that decision, they're almost like very excited. Like, I wanna get my stuff out there, I wanna start promoting, I want people to see me. And that's great. But sometimes that leads people to skip a really, really critical step, which is branding. Meaning you want your marketing to be out there, but you also want it to be good. And in order for it to be good, it has to be really consistent, it has to be really well thought out, it has to be kind of very thoughtful. And that's where branding comes in. Branding has to come before marketing. And it's sort of the platform on which your marketing stands.
Right. Like, the branding's who you are. Like, it's great to market yourself so people actually know that you exist. But you have to first have, like, some sort of reference that, like, oh, when I think of your brand, I now think of fill in the blank. So right. That's, like, the critical part in it is that, like, you need to have something that you stand behind. Like, for example, like water, right? So water is, like,
right,
a mineral, and you could just, you know, take it anywhere. But, like, if you think about, like, all, like, the different companies that produce water, it all has a different brand to it. Like, Fiji is known as classy. Like, it's classy water. It's the same water as Smart Water, which you think of as healthy. So right. When I drink Smart Water, I'm like, oh, I'm healthy and I'm hip. But when I drink Fiji, I'm like, oh, I'm classy and I'm fancy.
Right.
It's the same water.
And it comes down, and then their marketing sort of reflects that. Their marketing is really consistent with their branding. So let's say Fiji, like, I know they use a lot of influencer marketing. I think, do you know Danielle Bernstein, We Were What, on Instagram?
No.
High-end fashion influencer. And she is a ambassador for Fiji water, meaning you have to keep it consistent. Your branding and your marketing work really very much hand in hand. And it's sort of like a symbiotic relationship there. One of my favorite branding companies is a company called Brandless. You know what Brandless is?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, whoever this marketing agency is, it's such a cool idea. I think it's Red Antler. It's basically the concept behind Brandless is that you're paying so much for branding that that marks up your product. So the thought process behind Brandless is that since you're paying so much for branding, you're really, you know, if you're buying a $10 product, you're paying $10 for it. It costs the company $2, but they're spending $3 on branding. So what we do as a Brandless company is we strip away all of the branding and we're not passing on that fee to you, which is great. But if you think about it, Brandless is really their brand. They've
right.
branded themselves as being Brandless. They spent money, I'm sure, on their branding as Brandless. It's a really genius sort of
right, it's a backwards way to do it, but they still did branding.
Right, because then when you think of Brandless, you're like, oh, cool, that's a company that's not willing to pass on this. They have my best interests in mind. They don't want to pass on this extra expense to me. That's like sort of a backwards way to think about it.
It's important that they still thought about their brand.
Right.
Like, even though the fact that they're called Brandless and, like, their whole, like, you know, twist on is that I don't have a brand, they thought about the fact, like, okay, this is my company. You know, I'm going to not have a brand to therefore have a brand.
Exactly. Exactly. It's very conscious and thought out, and I think that's what makes great branding. My other favorite branding, I mean, are you a Trader Joe's fan?
Yeah, I love Trader Joe's.
See, everyone says that, though. Everyone loves Trader Joe's. Like, I can sit at my kitchen table and I can read that catalog about their food.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's entertaining. Their whole brand is so fun. It's so exciting. It's so approachable. Like, you go in there and somehow you're in a good mood, right? They hide that stuffed animal somewhere in their store and they, like, if you find it, you get a prize. I think it's only for kids, but whatever. But the whole point is, like, it's a really quirky, fun, relatable, exciting brand, to the point where I'll read their catalogs and I'll be reading these paragraphs about, like, their brand of sweet potatoes. And, like, technically it should be so boring, but, like, their writing is interesting. Their everything about it right. is so it's consistently fun. Like, their employees are wearing, exactly. Their right. employees are wearing these, like, wacko floral shirts, and their everything is, like, so consistently that great, like, Trader Joe's experience and that great Trader Joe's personality.
Right. I think that's really important. You just pointed out is to be consistent. Like, it doesn't work if your brand's going to be fun and then your ads are serious. Or, mm-hmm. you know, if you use, you know, you're all about fun, but then your logo's gray. It just, mm-hmm. it doesn't work. Like, you have to be consistent on every single platform, and including the marketing and the strategy that you put out to implement your ads. Mm-hmm. It just has to be consistent to your brand. All has to tie back there. When I think about your brand, I think about a certain thing. I think about it being fun, being serious, being light, airy, you know, spontaneous. It has to be that one word that just pops into my head that represents your brand.
Okay, I think our time's up. Rena and Eliana here. Thanks for listening. Signing out.
This wraps up another great edition of Mind Your Business. Special thank you to our lead guest, Lee Solds, who wrote the book Sales Differentiation, and to Rena Teitelbaum and Eliana Schwartz for talking about branding in the behind-the-scenes segment presented by Bottom Line Marketing Group. Well, this wraps up another great edition of Mind Your Business. Tune in again next Sunday night at 10 p.m. for another great edition of Mind Your Business right here on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Saflis has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.